all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information. Good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin, and good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense from the shores of Lake Wasota, where it is another beautiful day up north. I was going to say a little foggy, but boy, it sure lifted quickly off the cornfield over here. It is a Wednesday. It is May the 10th, and it is 55 degrees in Chippewa Falls. Nice to have you along. Let's see. The show this morning includes the end of the COVID emergency. And that's something I'm not sure that everybody is, that they know that we were even still in a COVID emergency. And so what does that mean? Does it mean anything to you and me? Is it about the safeguards and restrictions, or is it about something else? Well, we talked about the emergency declaration ending with Dr. Ben Weston back in February on an episode of Hometown Health. And so we're going to play parts of that back about what it means to have the emergency declaration being lifted nationwide starting tomorrow. Then in our next hour, we will be talking to Tourism Secretary Ann Sayers. This is National Travel and Tourism Appreciation Week, but in Wisconsin, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry that we don't appreciate for 1 week out of the year. It's a 24/7, 365 thing, especially here up north. So we will visit with Secretary Sayers about the economic impact of all the folks who come visit our state and all of us Wisconsinites who like to travel all around our very large and beautiful backyard. Plus, we will have Todd Alba with us as well of the Todd Alba Show, which starts right after this program on many of these Civic Media radio stations. And along the way, as you're hearing us talk about various things, we're going to talk about the Wausau School District in the next segment as well. If you would like to comment or ask a question on any of these things, 844-967-2789 is the phone number, or you can email us radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Aaron Zommers is down in Madison holding down the fort there. Mr. Zommers, good morning to you.
Good morning, Pat.
What's our weather report for your half of the state?
It seems nice. Not anything overwhelming, not super warm, not drought, not dreary or anything. It's just nice outside, which is a refreshing break.
Nice is very good. This is actually the first time. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that, you know, the furnace would still kick in now and then. And this was the first time you wake up, you know, we had the windows shut because, you know, it gets still pretty cool at night. But this was the first time where it's like you open up the windows first thing in the morning because it's actually, you know, almost a little too warm in the house and you want to get some of that fresh air indoors. That's a nice thing to have happen this time of year, for it to be this bright outside. You know, at 6:09 in the morning is awfully nice. The birds are still singing away. I'm digging on this. I could go for this more often than, you know, a few weeks a year.
Yeah, I got to wear shorts to work today, which is pretty nice because while we're still in the old location, it gets pretty hot in here.
I was going to say, thankfully, the camera only shows Aaron from the waist up, so we're not being treated to the sight of those knobby knees, or mine either, for that matter. So count yourself blessed if you're watching the live video feed on Facebook. The Up North News newsletter comes out every morning about 5 a.m., and in today's newsletter, Courier Newsroom National Correspondent Kia Vakil talks about what will happen if America were to default on its debts, which is exactly the hostage crisis that is going on in Washington right now. This is not a face-off. This is not some kind of a dance, as one national headline described it. This is a hostage taking. This is a group of elected officials, so-called leaders, who are unafraid to steer the economy straight off a cliff and into a recession unless massive cuts to programs that benefit Americans can be made. And again, this isn't the place for it, not the debt ceiling. You can negotiate a budget all you want, count the votes, and let's see whose budget wins. But when it comes to the potential for America going into default, well, Kia has a nice article that sums up just how bad things could be and what it is about Republicans that they are actually willing to do this to the economy. So we'll take a look at that as well. So that's in the Up North newsletter that, like I said, just comes out every morning about 5 a.m. on there. What else did Christina put in there today? There is a Wisconsin student that just earned a $150,000 scholarship to finish medical school. She's from the Wausau area, and she was interviewed by Up North News, and so you'll see her comments in our newsletter as well. And then there was this note from American Family Field. The Brewers are going to go back to stopping beer sales after the seventh inning. You'll recall that in Milwaukee and in other major league cities, because the games are going that much faster, they're not selling as much beer. And so they'd actually moved it from the end of the seventh to the end of the eighth innings. And other people took notice of that and said, wait a minute, if it shouldn't be about sales, it should be about, you know, not having people sloppy drunk on the roads after the game. So if anything, if the game is going faster, then you should end sales of beer and alcoholic beverages, you know, even earlier than you were before. Well, that's not happening, but they are in fact going back to the end of the seventh inning. So be advised if you're heading down to American Family Field. If you were there last night, you did not see the Brewers at their best, and we will have a summary of that game coming up in just a bit, along with some headlines from around the state, with a reminder that, you know, Up North News has got you covered all throughout the day, whether you're up early with me, or if you're getting uplifting stories from Christina Laurie in the newsletter, or if you're staying up to date on social media news and features with Sherita Booker. Catch all of our work at UpNorthNewsWI.com and UpNorthNewsWI on social media. We'll be back. Well, let's see. Yesterday we did a bunch of bumper music from Billy Joel for his birthday. We're going to do the same for Bono from U2, who has a birthday today. We'll tell you more about that and other things during our history lesson and music break coming up at about 6:50 or so. But right now at 6:16, it is time for sports and a Brewer game that folks thought would go the other way because Eric Lauer has had such good luck against the Los Angeles Dodgers in his previous 11 starts. Lauer had gone 7-1 with an ERA of just 2.37. But yesterday, last night, Lauer only went 3 2/3 innings. He didn't make it out of the fourth. He allowed four runs that included an unearned run, but that was Lauer's own fault from an errant pickoff attempt. He gave up a leadoff home run to Mookie Betts. Then the second run came in, and I looked up at the TV, and I was like, wait a minute, how'd they get two runs on just one hit? The one hit was the solo home run to start the game. What happened? And I come to later find out that Lauer walked a batter, then there was a stolen base, then there was the errant throw on a pickoff attempt, and then the runner scored on a sac fly. So the second run came in with no hits at all, and the Dodgers went on to win that game 6-2, even though their starting pitcher only went one inning. Noah Syndergaard left with a cut on his pitching finger, and still, because Lauer did not have his best game, the Dodgers were able to pick up the victory. They have a rubber game in the match now with the Dodgers this afternoon at American Family Field. Wade Miley will get the start for the Brewers today. You can hear that game at Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM, 1100 AM, all around the Fox Valley, and also from WRCE News from the Center and Richland Center at 107.7 FM, 1450 AM. The Brewers are off tomorrow, but they stay home, and the Kansas City Royals come to town for three games starting on Friday. And then next week, the Brewers are back on the road to St. Louis and then to Tampa. A few headlines to tell you about now on this Wednesday before we get in our next segment to the end of the COVID health emergency. This first headline, it isn't really a headline. It isn't really a news story, at least not yet. I'm very happy to say that as I looked through Wisconsin media briefly this morning, I don't see that anybody has tried to turn this thing into a news story. Not every press release that comes into a newsroom is a news story. And in this case, the right-wing legal group, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, put out a, you know, just a breathtaking report with a big old lead about how teachers, you know, they looked at all these campaign donation records and they determined that teachers give overwhelmingly to Democratic candidates. Aaron, I know that like me, you are shocked to find how scandalous it is that teachers who have been getting dumped upon by Republicans for the past dozen years are giving to Democrats. I am shocked. I'm shocked that there is gambling in this establishment, Aaron.
I too am shocked and appalled, and I can't think of anything that might cause that.
Anything whatsoever. And Senator Chris Larson, to his credit, jumped on this right away and said, to give you an idea of how intellectually dishonest the people at Will are, they're sharing data that shows teachers gave a total of $290,000 to Democrats over two election cycles, as if it were some sort of scandal. But let's not forget that one single family, the Elines, just gave $6 million to Dan Kelly. This is not a serious effort at a story, and yet, unfortunately, you know, we bring it to you as a laugh track. I'm sure there are other radio stations, especially, that will treat this as some kind of scandal. But really, it's just again the politics of outrage and trying to, you know, get people all ginned up against teachers and against public education. They don't like us. Well, go figure. When you've been doing what you've been doing over the past 12 years, including now the funding of two parallel school systems in Wisconsin, one public, one private, frequently religious, frequently unaccountable, and having no better performance whatsoever. Small wonder the people that support education are supporting the people who support them. On another matter now, speaking of public schools, back to the Wausau School District and the bullying that's been going on by a band teacher against a student at Wausau East, where we left things off yesterday. We had told you that on Monday night, the school board heard from people for about 90 minutes about the behavior of the teacher and bringing up new claims and wondering why the teacher's name was still on a list of teachers whose contracts were about to be renewed for next year. Well, now comes the latest on the story, again, from Natalie Eilbert of the Wausau Daily Herald, the Green Bay Press Gazette, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And she writes that less than 24 hours after a litany of complaints about the school district's retention of a band teacher, despite racial and homophobic conduct, the school board on Tuesday announced it would hire an independent attorney to conduct a new investigation. This is something that is, well, I don't want to say overdue, because yesterday I did say it's you know, usually never too late to do the right thing. And this is what should have been done earlier. It's something that is owed to the student, the family, and frankly, anybody else in the school who witnessed the conduct and saw people try to normalize it. And that's exactly what the school district was trying to do. And if there's one thing we're always hitting on here, is to not normalize bad behavior. Don't normalize the things that have a lot of bravado and exude a lot of confidence, but are still wrong. We don't have to normalize the gun violence in the society. We don't have to normalize the conduct of Donald Trump, who we're going to get to in just a second here. And we don't need to normalize racial or homophobic bullying just because it comes from a teacher who likes to use humor to set up a learning environment. That doesn't work. So the Department of Public Instruction is going to be involved as well, and will review whether the Wausau School District correctly followed state laws and district policies. The district will present legal arguments. DPI will make a decision based on those legal briefs on how the district applied state law when it came to the matter of this teacher and his behavior directly involving one student, but then, like I said, putting on an example for many others. So that does take us to trying to not normalize the behavior of the twice impeached, disgraced, and frankly disgusting former president of the United States who wants to be president again, but not only stands currently criminally indicted, but also now stands as somebody who has been found in a court on Tuesday to be liable for sexual abuse. And as a result, Trump has to pay E. Jean Carroll $5 million in a verdict that he has promised to appeal. But again, it is getting harder for him to spin away the legal problems, which were admittedly frustrating for so many people who wondered, how is this guy who has all but confessed to all manner of criminal conduct, from tax evasion to behavior that he chalks up as, you know, just locker room banter and locker room antics, how has he escaped accountability? Well, again, it's taken a lot longer than many people would have liked, but between the indictment in Manhattan, the investigation of the January 6th attack, the investigation into trying to overturn and undermine the election, trying to basically strong-arm the Secretary of State in Georgia, and now this sexual abuse case, consequences are finally coming for Donald Trump. And while it is certainly galvanizing many of his supporters, how many supporters are there in total? And does anybody really see that number growing? It certainly appears to me, and I'm certainly open to being wrong, but that there's an N in this equation, number of people who are currently enthusiastic supporters of Donald Trump. And I just see with each one of these, it becomes N minus this case and N minus that case, as more people look at something and say, you know, maybe we can do better than this guy. And at first you want to rush to his defense. Certainly that happens in politics all the time. But as people look at the actual case, when they look at the things that a jury looked at and said, you know, we're going to look past the decades-long history of crude and misogynistic comments, the repeated accusations of sexual harassment and assault, and we're just going to look at the facts of this particular case, whatever case it might be, they're going to find less and less reason to be supportive of Donald Trump. And so he is, of course, right now the front runner when it comes to the 2024 Republican nomination. And that also means absolutely nothing. We are so far away right now from still the first primary. And yet, New Hampshire voters are involved tonight in a town hall forum on CNN with Donald Trump. CNN giving him, I think it's an hour tonight. Caitlin Collins, their young up-and-coming political reporter, anchor, is going to be spending time trying to do something that no reporter's been able to do yet, and that is to get him to not filibuster any tough questions and basically flat out not answer them. So I don't know what the audience is going to be like, Aaron. I don't know if it's something that you're going to be paying any attention to. I know I'm not. I'll look back at it later on. But I don't know where the value is in watching Trump tonight, unless he's planning to confess to everything.
I think that the only value there could be had is if he just does confess to anything. I don't think he's planning to, but I think he will confess to some things, because at this point, he can't help it. He's done so much garbage that anytime he opens his mouth, it falls out.
It does. But where I really hope we go to on this is less about the show business side of things, that he to the actual effect on ordinary Americans. Here's what people need to keep in mind. Trump never gave us an infrastructure plan. It was always infrastructure week, remember? Trump never gave us a healthcare plan, an actual passable alternative to Obamacare. Trump cut taxes for the very rich. But beyond that, and beyond grossly mismanaging a pandemic, what's the actual substance? Now, there are people who, because he's crude, because he is what he is, you know, there's the comically inept Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville, who says, "I'd vote for him twice if I could," after seeing what that New York jury did to him. This is less about what a New York jury says or does, and what Donald Trump actually does. What do you do? Not who you are. We know who you are. Some people will like that, unfortunately. But when it comes to doing something, he's ever only been out for himself. We'll be back. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
So it's going to be a new day in America starting tomorrow, when the public health declaration of a state of emergency surrounding COVID-19 is allowed to expire. And so in a second, we're going to hear from Dr. Ben Weston. He is a special health policy advisor to Milwaukee County, a very noted physician across Wisconsin who was a guest of ours the first week of February when it was first learned that the emergency declaration was going to end on May 11th. What exactly does that mean? And so when we play back that excerpt, he's going to explain what it means. And then you'll hear my reaction, because it's not exactly what a lot of people thought it was, that it was, you know, are we talking about safeguards? Are we talking about programs? What exactly is it? And so we're going to have him explain it in his own words. And then after we hear that excerpt from him and from Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who was with us at the time, we'll talk a little bit more about what it means to have the emergency lifted, which is most definitely not the same as COVID-19 going away. So who does this affect? Here's how it was explained not long ago by Dr. Ben Weston.
There's going to be changes, especially to people who are uninsured or underinsured or undocumented, who won't be able to get the treatments, the vaccines that they've been able to get before without cost. And so it really just changes the landscape. It really puts COVID, like you said, in the category of everything else, which isn't necessarily a good thing. Because if you talk to folks who are uninsured or underinsured, everything else is pretty hard to get.
Wait, now that seems like a new way of looking at it, because I think most people, they hear the COVID emergencies are going away. When they think of emergency, they think of restrictions. The restrictions are going away. The point you're making is there are opportunities and access to care that are going away.
Right. I think that's the most important one. I mean, I don't know. We talk a lot about restrictions. There's not that many restrictions going on anymore. There's not lockdowns going on. There's not, you know, but there is a lot of nuanced care. If you need your COVID vaccine, you need your COVID boosters, those are free right now. And they're pretty widely available for free to anyone who needs them. If you get COVID and you are older or you are sicker and you need Paxlovid, that can be obtained for free. That's not going to be the case in a few months. And for a lot of people, that's going to make a big difference. For people who are well insured, who can, you know, cover their co-payments if they have them or whatever else, their co-insurance, it's not going to be that big a deal. But there's many, many millions of people who do not fall into that category. And for them, this is going to be a big deal.
It just heightens the health disparities that we already know are there. I mean, we've got the most expensive healthcare in the world, and we've got the worst outcomes of any industrialized country in general. And here in Wisconsin, we've failed to do things like pass Medicaid expansion. So there is a giant group of people out there who won't be able to get access to these essential treatments and services.
Thankfully, deaths are lower now than they have been. But the fact of the matter is, you add those numbers up, and that's the third leading cause of death in the United States after heart disease and cancer. And the third leading cause of death is pretty substantial.
Mm-hmm. And I read this morning, it's the eighth leading cause of death for young people. Right. And that was shocking to me because I think we dismiss that. We think, oh, kids are going to be fine, but they're not.
Right. It's not just old people and immunocompromised people. COVID remains unpredictable in the effect it's going to have, especially for folks who haven't been vaccinated and boosted.
So let's talk for a second about the miracle that came through this pandemic, and that is the rapid development of a vaccine. Now, for those first, for that first nearly year long period, it was perhaps the scariest time a lot of people will ever live through. And then the vaccine came, there was this great rush of relief, but then almost immediately on its heels came disinformation, came suspicion, came just some of the most outlandish stuff that is, that for whatever reason is still with us today. And I wonder, and I can say from secondhand experience, I know that doctors still get asked questions and have to dispel myths and things like that. Would you agree that that's still something that's prevalent in patients talking to their doctors and choosing to listen to rumors rather than science?
Oh, absolutely. I I'm sure Dr. Lyerly can speak to this too, but it's interesting living a bit in the two worlds of hearing on things like social media, on things like town halls, from groups, sometimes anonymous in social media, of what people are thinking, but then also at the bedside talking. I talk to almost every patient who I see in the emergency department, if they haven't been vaccinated, about the vaccine. And still the things I hear are often disappointing and surprising, but it's also encouraging that sometimes with a minute long conversation, these are short. Listen, I'm an emergency room doctor. I don't have a long attention span. So these are relatively short conversations, but still in a minute, 2 minutes, it's amazing what you can clear up. Simple myths. I heard from my cousin's friend that the vaccine causes X, the vaccine causes Y, they got this. And dispelling those myths one-on-one, it takes a long time, but dispelling those myths one-on-one does make a difference. So for your medical folks out there who are listening, whether you're a doctor, a nurse, a technician, whatever you are, those conversations with patients, they're tiring, they're fatiguing, but they matter and they make a difference. And you are the people who your patients look to for this kind of information.
You are so right. And as an OBGYN doctor, my patients are the most vulnerable and they're the least likely to get the vaccine. And that puts not only them, but their babies in danger and their long-term health. We talk about deaths, but think about the morbidity or the long-term health consequences related to COVID.
And then now we have Pat back.
Or do we? Son of a gun. Here's what I need to do first. I need the engineering folks from the radio station to come up here and attach two things to my computer. One, a blinking red light bulb for those times when I hit mute while a tape is playing so I know I'm unmuted. And then another is a mechanical hand to come out and slap me when I don't turn my microphone back on in a timely fashion and force poor Aaron to come on and tap dance for me like that. So, as I was saying, that was Dr. Weston and Dr. Lyerly talking about the COVID emergency ending. And Dr. Weston also gave a briefing yesterday to Milwaukee media, because again, he's a special health advisor, health policy advisor to Milwaukee County. And again, said many of the same things, that the true impact of this emergency ending is more financial. And it's not going to happen right away, because the government did purchase a large quantity of vaccine. And so all of that is going to be distributed for free. But at some point, that supply may run out. And then there are other forms of assistance that may run out. And then there are things that, you know, whether it's some sort of testing or treatment, that may, starting tomorrow, be something that has to be covered by your health insurance plan, or that you have to pay for out of pocket. There will just be fewer things covered for everybody simply by virtue of, you know, there's no longer this state of emergency that says we have to do whatever it takes to get everybody covered for everything, testing, vaccine, treatment, what have you. Now that we're not at that emergency level of a pandemic, the financial responsibility is going to shift. And like Dr. Weston said, for most of us, that's no big deal, but we should still be concerned that people with lower incomes, people who are immunocompromised and don't have good health insurance, are at a risk of getting infected and then perhaps potentially spreading that to others, maybe a new variant forms, and this whole thing blossoms all over again. And that's exactly what we don't want. And so Dr. Weston was simply making the point to continue to be vigilant, to keep up on your boosters, and you know, to take precautions when somebody is sick around you. I know, for example, I said I was going to do something and I didn't do it. And I'm going to fess up to it right now. But I remember saying in the days when we were all wearing masks all the time, I said, you know, when this is done, I might just revert to wearing a mask anyway in places like the grocery store. You know, we used to see it in, you know, Japan is the example that people bring up a lot, where they're very big on masking. And I remember saying at the time, you know, maybe that's what we need to be doing during flu season to keep from getting sick. Well, I didn't do that. And sure enough, last year, I got a mild case of the flu, and I was kicking myself the whole time thinking, you know, maybe if I'd have masked up, washed my hands a little bit more often, you know, how quickly we fall back to old habits. And in some ways, there's a sense of, you know, security in that. Like, okay, things are normal again, right? But they're not. Again, this is something that's with us. And in fact, talking to a nurse friend the other day, and I really should get this from, you know, another source, but this nurse that I trust a lot mentioned that she was doing a video chat with a relative, noticing a swollen eye, and the person saying, yeah, I'm not feeling that great. And she says, yeah, the new variant conjunctivitis is part of that. All this is to say, don't take me at face value on that, but that these variants, much like the flu, you know, we get different variants each year. You try to get the vaccine that matches up to it as well as possible. But, you know, we have always been learning as we go. And that's the thing that is especially, I guess, galling to me, is the number of people who don't appreciate that we have been learning as we go. We are in a new world, like nothing we'd seen in our generation, you know, certainly since the, you know, the Spanish flu epidemic, you know, from over 100 years ago. And yet people were so unwilling to understand that, you know, health professionals were trying to find their way through this as best they could. And yet here they were being, you know, criticized for not doing enough or for overblowing the threat, when you couldn't possibly have overblown the threat of something that killed more than 1 million Americans. I mean, in our next segment here, we're going to have our music break, our history lesson. And every so often, I go back into the newsletters that we put out at Up North News in 2020, 2021, 2022. And we look at this day in history from a Wisconsin COVID standpoint. And I've got a few things to share with you in the next segment about that, and about how even fairly early on, we had to deal with people who were disrespectful or dismissive of the science involved in COVID. But as noted yesterday by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services Secretary Designee Kirsten Johnson, the declaration of a public health emergency is what supported our efforts to have resources that most definitely saved lives, and that COVID-19 is not going away. The virus remains a threat, and we have to be mindful that many programs that are currently free are going to revert to insurance or personal payment for services. Now, there are programs out there, but as you heard Dr. Lyerly say, we wouldn't have all this instability and have to keep bringing back emergency programs if we would just fix our healthcare system in the first place. And I don't mean the healthcare system so much as the health insurance system. If we had accepted the Medicaid expansion a long time ago, you'd have more certainty in coverage for a lot of Wisconsin families. But again, there will be programs that are out there. It's just that you have to do a little bit of extra work to go get them. The Department of Health Services website is still up to date on those ways to use proper precautions, where to get the vaccine. And you look at all this, and I can't help but be thankful to the many, many health professionals and staff and related services who did what they could to keep us alive against the efforts of many, unfortunately. And we'll talk a bit more about that in our history lesson that's coming up along with music news next. You're up north. All right. Well, as we mentioned, it's Bono's birthday, and Melissa Kay joins us now from locally grown radio WFHR. Melissa, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Pat?
I'm great, thanks. We're going to start you off right away with some music trivia. It's Bono's birthday. He's 63. He was born in Dublin on this day in 1960. What's his birth name?
Today?
No, what's his birth name? Not birth date. His birth name.
Sorry, I turned you down. birth name. Ian.
No. No. Aaron, I know you've got the answer in front of you, but did you know? Would you have been able to answer that music trivia question?
No, I would not have been able to answer that.
Paul. Paul Hewson.
Paul. You know, I wasn't that far off.
No. Paul Hewson is 63 years old today, but took the name Bono.
Know he sang with the Coors.
Yes. Yes.
And one of my favorite musical groups.
I was going to say, I like the Coors too. Yeah, mm-hmm. Very much. Let's see. When Bono was 2 years old on this day in 1962, Marvel Comics published the first issue of The Incredible Hulk. So the Hulk is 61 today.
Woohoo.
To which you'd give him a birthday cake and you'd go Hulk smash, and then we'd get birthday cake all over ourselves. Kenan Thompson from Saturday Night Live. Want to take a guess on his age?
No idea.
How about you, Aaron?
Well, I can see it.
What? That's right. I keep forgetting I share these things with you.
I'll just guess. 52.
45, but I'm sure he'd be thrilled to hear that you're putting him in his 50s already.
I didn't even know who the guy is. So.
Wait. Did we just find a non-Saturday Night Live watcher? I mean, Kenan Thompson's been on that show for 42 years, it feels like. Well, at least 10.
Pat, I grew up under a rock. I didn't have TV.
Oh, it's just a stunning indictment of Wisconsin Rapids that people are not watching TV up there. All right, here you're going to like this one. Now, our next birthday is Jay Ferguson, who turns 76 today. Now, if you're a fan of yacht rock and all things 70s like I am, you will know the name Jay Ferguson from his one big hit in 1978. So let's hear that first. And that, of course, would be Thunder Island. And, you know, if that's all he did, that'd be fine. You know, anybody contributes something to the top 40 charts, so yay for them. But he continues to be a composer, and he composed a little ditty that folks a lot younger than me are familiar with. This is also from Jay Ferguson. I would have equated Jay Ferguson to the theme from The Office. Anybody? I wouldn't have guessed that. You could have given me 1,000 guesses. I would not have come up with that one. This is the day in 1503. This is slightly personal for me after living in the Cayman Islands for 3 years. This is the day that Christopher Columbus visited those beautiful islands for the first time. He named them Las Tortugas after the numerous turtles there. But later on, got the name Cayman Islands. So they were, you know, visited for the first time. We don't use the word discovered, because that.
I know there were people there already.
There were people there already. Yes. on this day in 1774, France's Louis the 16th and Marie Antoinette became king and queen of France. Spoiler alert: it did not end well for them.
Nope, heads rolled.
You know, and I wonder if at the wedding, did maybe the attendants say something like, now don't lose your heads with each other, you know, or something like that. But
yeah, they were pretty young.
Yeah. Number one song on this day in 1986 was by the Pet Shop Boys. See, it was on this day in 1869, the first transcontinental railroad linking the eastern and western United States was completed at Promontory Summit, Utah, with a golden spike. I wonder what's out. Is it kind of a tourist trap place now, or is it kind of in the middle of nowhere? I actually don't know what the site is like today.
I don't either, but they've made a lot of movies about that particular instance.
They sure have. The first one that comes to my mind is when... Will Smith redid the Wild Wild West.
Yes, Wild Wild West.
But there are plenty of others like that as well. Mm-hmm. Let's see. So a couple of notes I mentioned in the last segment about COVID in Wisconsin. 3 years ago in the newsletter, I wrote an editorial for the newsletter that talked about America's new workplace, coworkers getting sick all around you, even with widespread testing, and a boss who refuses to take the threat seriously, insisting you'd better show up at work or risk losing your job. And that's just the White House, because people were getting COVID like crazy in the Trump White House at the time. There was frustration in the United Kingdom, the government telling people go back to work, no, wait, stay home. We also did a story about drive-in movie theaters were becoming graduation venues because people couldn't gather in auditoriums. Maybe that happened out by you, Melissa. I'm not sure.
Yeah, we don't really have too many drive-in movie theaters around here, but...
There were definitely more outdoor functions, though, yes. Because that's the place where people could gather. Mm-hmm. On this day 2 years ago is where we first started talking about the changes in the labor force, that a lot of people who either lost their jobs, didn't come back to them, or decided to retire early. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were still about 4 million workers outside the labor force compared to pre-pandemic. And people were understanding we've moved into a new era with the workforce. And it's still tough these days to find good people for good positions.
True. But our unemployment rate is the lowest that it has ever been.
That's exactly it. It's you know, more
in Wisconsin.
Yes, more people are working than ever before. Unemployment is lower than it has ever been before. There are people that say, well, the labor force participation rate is too low, so that means there are lazy people sitting in at home. No, not actually. Wisconsin Public Radio reported last week, when you look at the prime working age, which is, you know, age 54 and under, mm-hmm. it's actually one of the highest in the nation. It's just that Wisconsin has a heavier proportion of older people like me above the age of 54. And frankly, there's a lot of people in my age in their late 50s who are like, no, I'm good. I saved up for retirement. I don't need to, you know, do this anymore. And they go looking for another better career. Maybe they want to work in radio. I don't know. Yeah.
And younger people aren't necessarily moving to the state for a lot of reasons.
But the ones who are here,
being one of them.
The ones who are here, though, they listen to locally grown radio. What are you working on now? What are you doing for fun out there these days, Melissa?
Oh, you know, we got a lot of exciting projects going on under the hat. So I can't really comment on them too much, but music shows, some other things. We're kicking around a lot of ideas here.
Are you making plans for Memorial Day weekend as well here? Are you a Memorial Day planner person, or are you just a staycation type of person?
I think there's a standing invitation to my boyfriend's aunt's cabin up in like the Tomahawk area. So
now, when you say a standing invitation, do you mean like for all of us? It's or just you mean for you?
He would probably welcome you, Pat.
Probably would. Well,
she's a wonderful lady.
Well, look, we've got that to look forward to. We've got to have a perfect weather weekend one of these times where the whole weekend has great weather, right? Probably not going to happen this weekend, but maybe Memorial Day. Yeah.
And I have to throw out there is a National Historical Park near that Golden Spike in Utah.
Oh, good. Now we know. Melissa Kay, good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
You too.
All right. Have a great day. We'll be back with more. You're up north.